You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I am excited for two reasons. One.
That's it? Okay.
Well, many reasons, but two right now.
Got it.
Alyssa Mastromonaco is here.
Two-time Keep It guest.
Hi. Yeah.
Well, she was a guest before, and now she's been elevated to co-host.
I'm co-hosting.
Congrats.
Get it straight.
I'm also sorry. Yes.
Never going to leave.
You have to put up with us the entire episode.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's like advancing from the fifth to sixth circle of hell.
Well, you know that you guys, this is sort of like Keep It is my sweet spot. It is the one pod I do listen to every single week.
Oh, good Lord.
Because it's everything.
Take that, Favreau.
You've got all my stuff. I like to talk about TV and pop culture.
You know why I'm also excited?
Why?
Because it is officially fall.
Oh, you just are glaring
at me.
You just want to hurt my feelings.
It's fall.
I will say, right when summer ends, then awards season happens. So on that level, I do enjoy it. But otherwise, you guys, you think a V-neck cardigan is going to make you look cute? It won't.
I should have brought leaves today and just thrown them in the air.
I will say, though, like in L.A., so I left New York and it was 90 degrees, which does not feel like fall.
Ooh.
But here your leaves just die.
Global warming.
They're just brown. It's a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing the linen I wore in July, so it doesn't. I'm not quite at fall yet.
There are randomly, I feel like, three streets, probably in like the Hancock Park area. Maybe they import the trees where the leaves actually turn like
colors.
Fall here, colors.
Yeah.
And you see them on the ground and everything like you're on the East Coast.
I mean,
I feel like they import them.
I know. It feels like, are they filming like, you know, a version of Our Town or something?
Stolen trees.
Was this in the Grover's Corners part of Hancock Park?
Also, speaking of former Keep It guests, Mandy Moore has a new song.
And it's so good.
Yes, it dropped
last
week.
Mature but not old. That's what I would say about that single.
Okay.
It's very good.
I've been calling it like white Roberta Flack.
Sure.
Yeah, if Roberta had a bit more of a poppier vibe, like her Ashford and Simpson song, Here It Comes.
Yes, I love that song. I was just, how crazy. I was just listening to It Seems to Hang On by Ashford and Simpson. How weird. Anyway. Okay.
Well, I think we're starting to be tethered.
Yeah. You know I don't like that movie, but okay.
It's such a good song.
It's such a good song. I mean, it's like the minute it came out, I've listened to it on repeat because I like need to learn it. You know?
Yeah.
That's my, because I love a song even more when I know all the words. But no, look. She's queen.
Yes.
There are a few people better, kinder, more talented.
I know. And I was actually sad I did not run into her this weekend. We're going to talk about the Emmys, obviously. But, I was sneaking in the Emmy parties and things. And later, I would see her Instagram post that she was at the same parties. I just did not.
Oh, how painful.
When I had my book event here in L.A., you know, it's like your book comes out and you're super nervous. And I got to my L.A. event and the woman who was running it comes up to me and she's like, some of your guests have already arrived. I'm like, what do you mean? It doesn't start for an hour. Mandy and her husband and their in-laws did not want to be late. And so they arrived. They had saved seats. I told them she had saved seats. They were there front and center just waiting like,
oh my God.
Like my mom at a dance recital.
She's
I couldn't
like
believe it.
A frighteningly polite and nice person.
I mean,
it's just like, is that possible? Anyway.
I mean, she came to Lewis's birthday party.
What?
And stayed. She brought some. I have friends who are like, did she bring these almonds that I really like? It's like, I don't know. But I was going to say about that single also. I saw somebody else make this comment, but I want to claim that I also had it. Anyway, it reminds me of Natalie Imbruglia's second album, White Lily's Island, which at the time was described as like a light version of PJ Harvey's Stories from the City, if you know that album. But it's mature, but also like, I don't know, you feel like you're listening to a person who has lived experience and has incorporated it into good Saturday morning music.
White Lily's?
She's from Australia. They have them there.
Wow.
The only white things I like are Succession and White Oleander.
Oh, Succession.
Oh, sure. A latter Michelle Pfeiffer hit.
Yeah, my queen. Succession. We're going to talk about that, too.
Oh,
but I'm so glad you're here.
Because, like, I have to say, as a very white person, which I am, mm-hmm. that is my favorite all-white show.
It is white excellence.
By the way, you know what is
like
also
me.
The whitest show of all time? Game of Thrones. When they were on stage at the Emmys, I was like, oh, yeah, right. You guys are all, you're all snow. Wendell and Christie dressed like Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Dressed like she was in Gaga's Judas video.
Yes. Oh, even that was more correct.
Well, I think that we're just going to have to go ahead and get the show started.
Okay.
Because I want to get into the Emmys. We are going to talk about them. Mm. We are also going to talk about Planeteer, Greta Thunberg.
Oh, yes. An Inconvenient Truth Hurts. Is that the name of this episode?
That feels right.
I love that title. I had one already, but maybe I'll go with that one.
That'd be a movie with a theme by Melissa Etheridge.
Yeah.
Just took a DNA test. Turns out David Crosby's the father of my kid.
I had a Fallout Boy. Pun.
Oh, you don't say.
In mind.
I'd like to reject that wholesale.
All right. I think people would like the title a little less 16 candles, a little more stop climate change.
I mean, do we have Dada titles now?
That's the name of one of their songs.
I know. But all their titles are just like, what refrigerator magnets fell into the guitar? I mean, it's just random words.
Well, Taylor Swift loves Fall Out Boy, which I found out this week.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. In her Rolling Stone interview. And I was like, you know, I always remember why I will be tied to her forever.
Why?
She's a Sagittarius. And I'm
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just love them.
I feel tied to her because of her cats.
Mm.
Which she names after television characters, that I actually do understand.
Olivia Benson.
Yes.
And Meredith Grey. Yeah. And also, I would just like to say, she inspired me because my cat is Midgey Maisel.
Oh, cute. Mm.
Because she is both delightful and a hot mess.
And will continue to win Emmys even when it doesn't need them.
She's also white, the cat.
Yeah. So we will also have an interview with Terrell Alvid McCraney.
You ever just meet somebody and know they are smarter than you in every way? That's how Ira and I feel.
Happens to me a lot.
Imagine being friends with him.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Just sometimes there'll be text exchanges and he'll relate something to The Tempest. And I'm like, I remember part of that.
Right. Caliban.
And I love
theater. Not cute. That's what I remember.
But yeah, we have an interview with him that we did a bit ago, so Alyssa won't be involved in it.
I won't, sorry.
Sorry, the magic of Keep It. Sometimes
you,
things early.
Sometimes you vaporize.
We will be right back. Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's like pretty mild outside and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15.
Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the Black experience sound like a 3-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
This Sunday was the 71st Primetime Emmy Awards. 71!
I root for award shows because I don't have a brand otherwise. But also, we only have like 4 live events that everyone gathers around and tweets about. And the Emmys are, you know, in the top 5. And now that the Emmys have the worst ratings ever, I am in peril.
Well, I mean, you could always write for the Teen Choice Awards.
Oh, God. Where they still give out entire surfboards.
They give out a surfboard.
When's the last time a child surfed? I want to know.
I don't know. I always have a dream of winning one at some point because I want that surfboard.
Well, that's the award show where there's also 275 categories.
Yes.
You can be like, best influencer who wears, you know, cute spectacles.
It lasts an entire week. Like an Aristotelian play competition. No, not really. I think it's like 2 hours.
Whatever. Still a lot.
And they present like 2 awards on air, but it goes on and on and on.
There's just a scrolling screen where it's like, and we gave this to Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Anyway, despite some very historic wins, the show was actually pretty awful.
It was terrible.
It was a crazy dichotomy of how the winner tally can be amazing and the show can be truly unwatchable in
treacherous.
Most respects.
It was like nothing. I am not you, Lewis, but I have been watching award shows since we had a television. I look forward to it. I plan meals around it. I bake. I prep. Even if I'm alone, I have cocktails. I take it in and I enjoy the beauty. This was so bad.
It was
unwatchable. It really was. I mean, like, I had to think about it. I'm like, was it as bad as last year with Colin Jost and Michael Che?
No, it was not.
It was not as bad.
They weirdly sort of just delivered the jokes they had to deliver, to put it in Ira parlance. But
they did what they had to do.
There we are. But this year, the lack of host made the whole show feel super unmoored. And,
right.
And leading, by the way, with a weird Homer Simpson bit that led into the weirdest Bryan Cranston speech that he looked either mortified to deliver or scared to deliver.
Okay, so talking about that, it was on Fox,
right?
Which is why Homer Simpson came out first, and then he died.
He was hit by a piano because it's like Looney Tunes now. That show.
And then Anthony Anderson got up, and I liked the bit about him trying to steal some Emmys with his mom.
That was
but
funny.
But the bit about him trying to save the show, I don't know why he kept shouting Taraji's name
right.
and saying, I'm not going to let the Empire fall. It was like,
yeah, that was
what
weird.
Fox person was like, make a bunch of Empire jokes so people know that Empire is coming back. Let me tell you something. One of your stars faked a crime this year. They know about your show.
And the other star was just on the red carpet, Terrence Howard, talking about Pythagoras like he was going to solve his riddles. By the way, Pythagoras, not a riddle maker.
So we should have known the Emmys this year were going to be a disaster because, one, Fox was putting them on. And every time Fox puts on the Emmys, they're always cheap and promoting their insane TV shows like The Masked Singer.
That was weird, too. That was uncomfortable.
Jenny McCarthy was on the red carpet, and it was interesting to watch celebrities who know better know better and like look at her in the eye and say, actually, this isn't going to happen. You and I speaking.
Well, let's talk about the fact that she basically harassed Christina Applegate on the red carpet. She talked about how she watched Christina growing up on TV and wished that she could be her when she got older. Christina Applegate is a full 1 year older than Jenny McCarthy.
Oh my God, so grim.
Does not vaxxing make you
dumb?
Lose track of time? I think she's been dumb. She's been dumb since Singled Out.
I mean, I agree. And like Christina Applegate, she just was like, she had that look that was like,
I want to kill you.
I'm like trying to. I call it doing like the Sean Spicer Into the Bushes. She was just like trying to fade back.
Yeah,
like save me.
Also, what? Christina Applegate. No, I'm going to criticize Christina Applegate for a second because she did an interview too on the red carpet with Juliana Rancic. Where I think Juliana Rancic said, "Oh, is there anything you want to say to your daughter on TV or something?" And then she made the remark like, "Well, I don't think she's watching E," which is funny. But I also just want to say, I think Juliana Rancic is given too hard a time. I think she does a pretty good job.
Wow.
And people treat her like trash for having about as much personality as you're allowed to have on E.
It is a twofold reason. One, you could forever hate Juliana Rancic for her comments about Zendaya that time.
That was definitely
where she
said dumb.
That she smelled like patchouli. However,
which, hello, I wear nothing but patchouli. I hope you can smell me from across the table.
Right. I'm also like, I love the Tempo fragrance from Diptyque, which is basically patchouli.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I walk around smelling like patchouli all the time.
Like a clean hippie.
Would you hate me, Juliana? Or the other twofold, obviously Zendaya is amazing and talented and the future. But I feel like that was also a lightning rod moment that made everyone sort of be like, we stan her.
Zendaya?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Honestly...
Juliana's moment was evil, but it kind of had the intended effect of making us realize that Zendaya was amazing, because her response to it, I feel like, is what made people start standing her.
Correct. And also, I now finally watched Euphoria, and I know to be terrified of her talent, and also terrified of teens. These kids are giving me an anxiety attack.
Did you see Gwyneth Paltrow's interview with her?
Yes.
No.
Gwyneth Paltrow was like, what did I do to have to talk to this woman?
Right. Because weirdly, they're both from the same moment in time, too.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Like, they both arrived at, like, 95, 96. And now they're both here. And they're both couldn't be in vaster, more different places. You'd never think they interact. So just from a curiosity perspective, I wanted to see them interact. But also, Gwyneth does not just meet anybody. So that's very shocking.
Which is also kind of weird, too, because I think Goop falls into the same category as anti-vaxxing.
It's true.
I mean,
so they probably have a lot in common.
The left-wing anti-vaxxing is Goop. Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Well, it's like, you know, the old episodes of Law & Order SVU. We always laugh because I live in Tribeca. And in the old episodes of Law & Order, it is always the white Tribeca moms who are making people sick. They're the anti-vaxxers. They're lying. They're sending their kids to school. And they also...
covering up like, murders.
And they also like Goop. And so I do feel like they dovetail in downtown Manhattan.
Mm. Guys, somebody has to buy a Vicuña fur purse. And it may as well be Goop customers. Just leave them alone.
Well, no host wasn't the only problem that this show had. Thomas Lennon's voiceover was a mess.
Can I tell you something
appalling
about that? Okay. I think there's a universe in which commentary on the awards with some sarcasm would work.
Of course.
There was something about the way
hosts usually do that.
Yeah. And what I was referring to is they would announce the winner, and then on the way to the stage, Thomas Lennon would read, I'll say, snarky facts about the winner or, you know, congrats to Columbia's own Julia Garner or whatever he'd say. Mm-hmm. And the tone of it was so strange leading into actual sincerity. It just didn't work. It was so jarring. It made you forget the moment itself. It made you forget to be happy for the winners.
Yeah. I think it tends to work when you're introducing people.
Yeah.
I like when the host is introducing to people. You know, it's like, especially if it's a random pairing and you can make a joke about, you know, why The Rock is coming out with Meryl Streep or something, you know, that's funny. But yeah, when someone is winning, and especially when it's historic moments like the show ended up having, which It's by chance, by the way.
It's not like the producers
who made this mess of a show knew that was happening. Mm-hmm. It just feels weird doing that when someone's about to go on stage.
Yeah.
And he seemed over it. He said it sucks.
Yeah, he kept trailing off. Like, his voice kept trailing off, and his funnies weren't funny.
So what did we like about the show?
I mean, I guess I would say I like the speeches, generally speaking, particularly Michelle Williams, because she gave a speech about that sort of harkened back to when she was underpaid for All the Money in the World, and Mark Wahlberg, I believe, was paid 10 figures for whatever he had to reshoot or whatever.
Well, that's how much you pay someone who almost kills an Asian man and gets away with it.
And said he could have prevented 9/11. Thank you.
Oh, I forgot about that nugget.
Yeah. He's just got that kind of energy.
She gave a speech where she talked about pay disparity, and she also, it was tight, and she didn't skip a word. There is nothing wrong with preparing a speech down to the word.
Wait, so I have a question. What was the controversy?
With Michelle Williams?
Yeah.
So do you remember the movie All the Money in the World?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was about the Getty family and the
kidnapping.
Right,
I watched
whatever.
It. It was okay.
Yeah, exactly. So Michelle Williams and Mark Wahlberg, they had to do all these reshoots because Kevin Spacey was originally in the movie.
Right.
And they replaced him with Christopher Plummer, who would eventually be nominated for an Oscar. Anyway, because of those reshoots, Mark Wahlberg, who I'm sure had 50 other Transformers movies on his plate or whatever, was paid something like more than double what Michelle Williams was paid for those reshoots. And she basically just agreed to do it.
And it was wild because they were rep by the same agency, too.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah.
They knew that he was getting more than her.
So she won Best Actress in a Miniseries for Fosse Verdon.
Right.
And she said, I thank the producers for giving me exactly what I needed, more resources, even when it costs more money. And that naturally led to her sort of bringing up the All the Money in the World.
Which was great, too, because she also didn't just mention equal pay for women. She pointed out that women of color make much less money than even white women in the industry. And I thought it was a very well-rounded speech. I thought it was great.
Right.
She looks good. She's so young. That, Ellen Burstyn energy
for me. That dress, I think, was one of the best on the red carpet.
She looked fantastic.
She looked beautiful.
And it also gave us a beautiful unintended moment of people who were mad about the speech.
That's why I'm asking. Right. Why were they mad?
Well,
people
get mad about the speech because, I mean, why are you talking about equal pay?
That's why they were mad?
I mean, pay disparities don't exist, Alyssa, just like climate change.
There are, by the way, too many correct things to talk about in a speech. It's a strange ceremony.
Right.
What are you supposed to do with that minute and a half? Like, do you really just want them to name agents, et cetera? There are clever things to bring
Every
up.
Every time someone was like, UTA, et cetera. I also
Boring.
Feel like the only people who think they're agents were people at UTA. It was like, chill out, UTA.
I'm not saying I'm going to win an EGOT anytime soon, but I've got news for you. I'm not thanking anybody on my fucking team. I'm thanking Jane Fonda for existing, et cetera.
You know whose speech I loved? Alex Borstein.
Hmm.
I think she is like almost, she's not underrated. She's well rewarded. She's been on Getting On and all these great shows. She really is fucking hilarious.
She is.
Billy Porter's speech was fantastic. The only time I like someone thanking someone who represented them, because he just thanked his manager, who said had been with him for 29 years and supported
That's a
him.
Long road to hoe. You get a
right.
thanks for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, he hasn't fired you, which means he got posed and all this, and you didn't become, like, obnoxious, and he kept you on his team.
Yeah.
That's great.
And he was wearing a giant hat that looked to me like a shoehorn.
Yes.
I felt so sad. As someone who's 5'2", the first thing I saw, I was like, I'm so sad for the people sitting behind him. Like, you just can't see anything. And then I said that, and then like 25 people said it on Twitter. So I was like, all right, I'm not original.
This weekend I went to a screening of the Downton Abbey movie, and it was themed, like you could dress up for it. And one of my friends was sitting directly behind somebody in a fascinator. And oh, I laughed because it wasn't me.
Yes, he was wearing the moon from the Gershwin musical Crazy for You. And He looked good, though. What I really like about Billy is that he leans into camp for his outfit. So he knows his camp and he knows it's fun.
Kind of like Prince.
Yes.
Yeah.
May he rest
yeah.
in peace. May he rest in peace.
I mean, and God love him, JVN. But I feel like when Jonathan Van Ness goes for those wilder looks, it doesn't have the effect that Billy does.
Oh,
well,
I agree.
Well, Jonathan Van Ness is more going for like a slinky, feel-good-in-my-skin thing, whereas Billy Porter is going for showbiz.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But it always seems like JVN is trying to go for showbiz and trying to be like, because he's glamour, he's fashion. It just doesn't work.
was I just talking about recently how 6 years ago there was that Eurovision contestant, Conchita Wurst, who won, and she, you know, had a beard and long hair. Yeah. And at the time, I remember thinking, what a crazy look. People are not going to, whatever. This is so unusual. This is going to break boundaries. Now every gay man has a friend who looks like that. Now everybody's like, you know, slightly genderqueer, at least in presentation, when they're going out to Palm Springs.
Right. A beard and a dress, groundbreaking.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
I really liked Jarrell Jerome's speech.
Oh, yes.
When he won for When They See Us, it was... Also, a reminder that, what, three black people won historic wins.
Oh, yeah.
All night. Because RuPaul won, too.
Right. Exactly. That was great.
Yeah.
Guys, did I tell you what happened with RuPaul?
So, no,
okay,
please.
I work in late night. I was doing a bit backstage. And I was going to the bathroom. And I walked past RuPaul, who has just won his Emmy. This is a brag. But I need to tell the story because somebody should hear it. I walk past him, and then I hear him go, I know who you are. And I'm thinking, oh, it's like, you know, I don't know what he means. I turn and he goes, I use that Jeopardy gif all the time. And he kissed me on the face.
What?
Anyway, sometimes I don't think, you know, I'm like, why would I ever really, you know, get to know RuPaul? It was a pretty sweet moment. I was literally like, I have to text my mom.
That's lovely.
I know. Isn't that sweet? But, he stopped me.
But speaking of RuPaul, he was in the hot seat.
Oh, yes.
Backstage,
right.
Danielle Young from Essence asked why, for someone who talks about diversity, et cetera, everybody on stage with him was white. There was one Latina, I believe. And his answer was very weird.
Oh, was it?
What
yes.
was it?
So he was asked, I don't see a lot of diversity. I'm curious how you feel, especially someone who represents so strongly for the LGBT community. His first response was, and the BLT community.
Those are letters, okay.
And then he said, first of all, the host of our show is black, gay, and a drag queen. So check, check, and check. But no, we're pretty diverse. Yes, there are lots of different types of people up here. Is it important? Absolutely. You know, I grew up, I had to fight. I feel like I'm about to quote a movie right now. And then a bunch of people in the room said, all my life I had to fight from The Color Purple. And he said, yeah, yeah, it wasn't easy getting here. You know what I had to do. And some of the things, I'm not going to repeat what I had to do, but yeah, I think we got it.
Whoa.
Well, I mean...
Is he talking about sucking dick for water?
That was a journey.
He sounded like the man from the Firefest documentary. You know what I had to do.
Oh,
also,
that
by the
guy.
Way, I just want to say, like, that question would not have immediately occurred to me, and it is a fair question.
Well, no, yes, it was a thing that occurred to me immediately, and a lot of people on the internet, obviously, because you're so used to seeing so many white producers just walking up on the stage, right? It was a stark reminder that a lot, even when you have diverse faces, so many of the producers of things are white, which is why I really like Ryan Murphy involving people like Janet Mock.
Oh, Janet Mock.
So, like, tell the story of Pose. And seeing RuPaul walk up on that stage and knowing the race issues that have happened on the show, Drag Race, just seeing him walk up with a bunch of white people was very stark. And it just sort of hit me. And it was like, it's that thing you get, you know, where you some people who get to where they need to be sort of don't have it in their minds to help elevate other people of color. You know, he's like, he mentioned, I had to fight. I had to do this. It's like, great. So what are you doing to help other black queer people not have to do that?
And
you don't need to give white queer people more of a job producing Drag Race. It's also interesting just knowing that these stories, that so many memorable queens of color on that show, their stories are being crafted by white people behind the camera.
Right. And I mean, like, I would say among reality shows, there's conversations about intersectionalism occurring that you just wouldn't see anywhere else. But you're right. For that reason, I forget to think about, well, what's happening backstage on that show, you know?
Yeah, because you see it forefront. Like, you see, like, the Latrices, the Valentinas, you know, the Vixens, et cetera, on camera. And then you forget that, you know, the rest of it. It's all white. Anyway, Rue.
You better work.
Speaking of white things, Succession won Best Writing.
Right.
and a drama.
I think they're going to win a lot more next year.
I do. Yeah, I think it's because so.
Oh, it's, we're still at the tail end of Game of Thrones. Of course, yeah. They're going to win more next
yeah.
year.
This is my brag moment.
Go
so
on.
I was at a party.
Oh, please.
First of all, everyone felt this way. There were so many stars at like the evening before Emmy party. I saw Ezra Koenig there again.
Oh, really?
Like, he was with Rashida. They were like, we want to see the Succession people. Like, Amy Poehler was like dancing over with the Succession people. I danced with Shiv to
DMX's
party up in
her
here.
Her name is, by the way, Sarah Snook.
Yeah, Sarah Snook.
Australian.
But wouldn't you rather be known as Shiv now?
I yeah. guess. I'm just yeah, saying. Yeah. Single
they
name phenomenon, Shiv.
Were the stars of the night.
Were they nice?
Everyone, they were very nice.
Oh, thank God.
Nicholas Braun, who plays Cousin Gregory, is basically Cousin Gregory.
Is he really 7 feet in real life?
Yes, he's so tall. He was very sweet. But I will say, I found out a crazy story.
What?
From Sarah Snook. So first, I felt crazy approaching her at the Hollywood Reporter party. And I was like, just want to fight over with you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to your publicist. And I took it and I put it on Instagram. But then she found me at the EW Emmy party and said, so one of my friends in Australia saw this photo of us and was like, oh my God, how do you know Ira? I love Keep It. Anyway.
What?
Hi to that person, if you're listening.
That's your story? Somebody has heard of our podcast?
No.
That, I mean,
so we start. I started,
she approached you.
Yeah. So then I started talking about how we have the same birthday because it's mentioned on Wikipedia that she was born July 28th as well. I was like, oh my God, you're a Leo. And she said, no. She said that she has tried constantly to change her birthday to her actual birthday, December 1st on Wikipedia, but Wikipedia always tells her she's wrong and denies the changes.
Wow.
So her birthday, I think, will just now be July 28th forever.
Who the fuck put that propaganda out there? By the way, speaking of people I'm fascinated by, this isn't a succession thing. I was sad that, so Fleabag won all these awards, most awards, but then didn't win Outstanding Supporting Actress. I love Sean Clifford on that show, who plays the sister Claire. I think the thing that Fleabag for me gets the most right is that particular dynamic between sisters of being, I'm thinking of my friends Erica and Anusha right now. If you're listening, I'm sorry, I'm outing you. Of being like mortified by everything your sibling does and indignant about it and mad at them. And then also there's something foundational about your relationship where it's like you're mad that you would do anything for them. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is really well represented by the two of them. And also Sean Clifford is now borderline in my coven. Remember that, the coven game? Mm. Because she's about to be in a dramatization of the UK Who Wants to Be a Millionaire cheating scandal, where a couple would cough three times if the answer was C, and then they ended up winning $1 million.
I remember
that
scandal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
The greatest UK drama since Hollyoaks. I will say that...
I love you, Sean Clifford, just want to say that.
I will say that Fleabag winning highlighted something else about the Emmys. There was, I think, a report that like it's been maybe like almost a decade since a network drama has won best drama. Mm. And then thinking of comedy, Wendy Williams had a Kiki Palmer moment this week where she said, I don't know who this is.
About
but
Phoebe
congrats,
Waller-Bridge.
Girl, to Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And it was like, of course she doesn't know who she is, because it's a reminder that media people love Fleabag.
Yeah.
And Succession, which ratings aren't huge either. They're not Game of Thrones ratings.
Really?
No, I'm disappointed. And white people, watch it.
White people, you can't count them on for anything.
And it's just a reminder that this new sort of streaming era, it's people aren't globally watching so many of these things.
Right, everything like, is a niche choice now.
There's not consensus TV anymore.
Yeah. And even though Fleabag's winning, that will probably get more eyes on Fleabag, or at least Phoebe. She'll be cast in movies and like other things, and people will get to know who she is as a celebrity. Like, she's going to be on SNL this season.
And she's writing the upcoming James Bond movie.
Yeah. And they may never see Fleabag, but they'll know who Phoebe is, and there'll probably be people later being like, oh my God, I finally saw this Fleabag show.
Right.
And it's interesting. But yeah, it's just a reminder that like even with like Emmy ratings low and things, and Fox really trying to jam home for people to watch The Masked Singer or Empire or whatever, still more people will watch those shows at their lowest rated than have ever watched Fleabag.
Right. That is extremely grim. I am sad.
I mean,
to
it's
be
network
TV.
More people have network TV than they have Amazon Prime.
Speaking of ratings, by the way, I saw a couple people, namely Mark Harris, tweeted about this, and I think it's true. It is crazy how the Oscars are still talked about as like going through a ratings crisis when it's still the second most popular live event of the year, and it had something like 29 million viewers. The Emmys, meanwhile, have like 5 million. Like, it's like a fraction of it. And we just don't care to have that conversation as much. I don't know.
Right. Even as a TV person who adores it, I feel like the Oscars is more of an event. You know? I mean, as a person who grew up loving TV, I just always felt that the Emmys, the Oscars doesn't always get it right, obviously, but it feels more like a fun competition. Mm-hmm. The Emmys just always feel like either a foregone conclusion for a show that keeps winning every fucking year.
Oh, Veep.
Yeah. or like Modern Family, you know? Right. Like, and, or it's not really representing the stuff that you love, you know? I mean, there's something to be said about, oh, comic book movies like Black Panther, mm-hmm. or even when like comedies win Oscars. Et cetera, right? The shows that people really love and that are interesting and doing so much for the genre on TV are never nominated or win.
Or it takes them forever to be nominated.
Or to recognize the creators, you know? Because I'm like, the Emmys would be much more interesting if shows like Star Trek or like Buffy or other shows of that ilk that were on lower rated networks than the big four, ever got nominated, but they didn't. Well, you know, like, you're not recognizing Buffy's musical episode at the Emmys. It's sort of like, it's always felt out of touch to me watching the Emmys.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they could spruce it up. You know, like, I think one thing that would be so interesting is, like, they waste time on all these, like, lame comedy bits that don't land. They should do, like, man on the street interviews. Like, imagine how much it would do for Succession if they interviewed diehard fans of Succession as an intro to whatever nomination there was. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I just feel like
proof that people are watching TV.
That they're watching it, why it's interesting to people. Because if you just watch a clip, say you don't know the show, which a lot of them that are on Emmys I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And you, well, not a lot, some. And I just feel like they could bring it more. It's like, if it's not going to be as elevated as the Oscars, at least make it useful to the, you know, industry.
You wouldn't rather just have Bryan Cranston insist that this is the most powerful time in television history and then walk off
stage
and sulk. I was like,
did Aaron Sorkin write that speech?
Right. No, it was some Studio 60 shit.
And it was...
It was Studio 60.
And it was overwrought, and it completely didn't seem like it was serious because it came immediately after Anthony Anderson's bit.
Right.
So which was a zany bit.
So I thought it was comedy. And then by the time you realize that Bryan Cranston, no, this is real. Television has never been so damn good that it was serious.
See, I thought it was a joke because I saw Network.
Right. Yeah.
Like on Broadway. Mm. And that was basically...
Yeah, the timbre of it. Yes.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is like a bit, you know? Yeah. I didn't think it was serious.
Mm, wow.
Guys, I'm really being educated here today.
Who knows? Maybe it was a bit.
Maybe as far as I could tell, people were just clapping.
Will tell us.
Yeah. Well, the Emmys.
Who else did we miss? Was anything else interesting? I enjoyed Patricia Arquette's speech a lot.
Yeah. She was good.
In an impromptu way, she talked about her sister Alexis Arquette dying last year and
called out for, you know, stop persecuting trans people and to hire them.
Yeah. She kept it pretty simple. She's like, give them jobs.
Give them jobs.
She's like, okay? And?
They can't all be cast on Pose.
Right, right.
And she's living her best life over 50.
Right. And it's just a reminder that, like, Alexis Arquette was in movies and things. That's like how you knew who she was. You know?
Here's a good essay question for this panel that Patricia Arquette just reminded me of. How many Emmys do you think equals an Oscar? I think it might
four.
Be four. You think it's four?
Four.
I think I was going to say 3 to 4, but you have to have it in two categories. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Because I think if you just won four, like John Larroquette or I think Laurie Metcalf has 3, it doesn't feel exactly right because you just got them for the same role, you know?
Right. No, I think it's like 4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing I mean, you know, like people continuing to win for the same role when like it's not like the material has really changed. Mm-hmm. It's I don't know. I think there needs to be.
But I also
I think there
like
needs to be
that about
where,
the Emmys. I like the consistency and the like. Actually, it's not that entertaining to give someone the same award again and again. But sometimes, what he's supposed to do, like they, you know, it,
I don't know. I feel
to
like
commit
if you win
to a winner
year,
has integrity.
I feel like maybe if you win 1 year, you shouldn't be able to enter the next year.
I agree with you.
I think that's crazy.
I do. Because you're constantly watching the same people win awards.
You got to spread the wealth. Like, love Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many people... Like, yes, she is excellent, and I guess if you're just... But, like, if they were really a true litmus test, it would be one thing, but it's all a little bit, you know? Like, who's campaigning? Who's spending more money? Who's doing what?
I just feel like in that case, though, then the Emmys would lose meaning because everybody would have won. You know what I mean? There is, like, a degree of interest to having... Eight, like, oh, Cloris Leachman has 8 Emmys. You know why? Because she's been in fucking everything and was excellent in all of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas if she just had one thing, I don't know. I think volume does say something, just like with the Grammys. That, to me, is the only thing Grammys have in their corner now.
Yeah.
Grammys, you always have to, year after year, you're always nominated for something different.
Right, yeah. True. Yeah.
Right?
And that's the thing. Like, the Oscars and the Grammys, the difference is, like, it's always something different.
Right.
And at least the Golden Globes makes a... effort to, because they like new shiny things, the Hollywood Foreign Press does, to always nominate like new shows or actors within the TV category within like their first year.
Which unless they're just committing to like the one show that you forget exists. Like the Golden Globes always reminded me that Outlander existed.
That shit too, you know?
You just reminded me Outlander existed.
Exactly, right.
Oh, well, our horny librarian listeners are very upset with you too. all right, well, that's our Emmy combo.
Enjoyed the win. Congrats to Jodie Comer, too, who looked exactly like evil Betty Gilpin throughout the ceremony.
It would have been wild if Phoebe had won for
Killing Eve,
because then she would have matched David E. Kelly, winning for a comedy and a drama in the same year. And probably better than him, because she would have also won for Best Lead Actress.
Right, yeah. Instead, she had to settle for a Donald Glover year, where she won for acting and series and writing.
Wow.
Pathetic.
Yeah.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
In studio today, we have Oscar winner Terrell Alvin McCraney to talk about his new own series, David Makes Math. Terrell Alvin McCraney. I like people with long names, obviously. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
We had Barry here at the end of last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we were talking about you.
So, I hope good things.
No, he was like, I hate working with Terrell.
I agree. He should. He's so talented. So
when playwrights just like rummage their way into movies and win an Oscar immediately, I'm sorry, it feels like you're making a mockery of the whole thing. It's very Tom Stoppard.
Who? I'm joking. I love Tom Stoppard. I was just kidding.
Did you see Rock and Roll though?
No.
Okay. That's why you love Tom Stoppard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. It was just so long. It was very long. No, you are doing so much. You are playwriting. You are writing movies. Now you have this TV show. Mm-hmm. What else are you doing? You're still teaching at Yale?
Yeah, I'm still the chair of playwriting at Yale.
I hate too many jobs.
Yeah, it's the Caribbean inside of me, I think. Just one too many jobs.
But tell us a bit about your transition into television then. I mean, you've done plays, you've got the Oscar, and now you're doing television.
Well, it's, Ira, you actually know this probably better than you're describing it. So you're leading me to talk, which is nice. But, you know, like these projects don't sort of come out of thin air or come in a nicely planned way. I mean, the script for In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue was written in 2003. Mm-hmm. The summer after my mother passed away, or my mother died of AIDS-related complications, I wrote that script and put it in a closet, put it in a drawer, put it on a hard drive, and sort of kept it through grad school. And it just happened that Barry got a hold of it through the Borscht Film Festival, friends of ours at the Borscht Film Festival in Miami, around 2010. So, you know, it just, again, it was one of those moments where, and he said, look, we can make this into a feature, not this weird length script that you have. And I said, oh, okay. And that's what he said he would do. And he's a Scorpio, so he does what he says he's going to do. And so,
do not mention astrology around Lewis.
Oh, sorry. It's
I'm eventually bringing my friend, Shani, who is a astrologist on the show.
Oh, dope.
I'm going to convert Lewis.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're pretending like I'm going to get one horoscope one day that's going to change my entire view of this. I mean, I'll allow you to do it.
But I'm also bringing a gun.
Okay. All right.
Oh, no. Don't do that. Yeah. So, I mean, these projects happen at their own maturation, their own time. And similarly, around 2010, 2011, Andre Holland, who is another friend of mine, brought me out to L.A. And just said, you know, I just want you to be out here and take meetings and write some scripts. And write ideas for scripts down. And one of the ideas was this television series. I met with HBO, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm really interested in creating a series around being gifted. Mm-hmm. And not gifted like I'm gifted, but gifted like in the gifted program. So when mm-hmm. you're in that black school or you're in that black community and somebody's like, oh, you can read on this high level. They then all of a sudden test you for gifted and they bust you away to all these very prestigious white schools outside of your neighborhood that then start teaching you things like don't say aunt and gonna and wanna and finna. And then they invite you to sleepovers. And then your parents are like, what the hell is a sleepover? Because they're black and we don't do that shit. And so you start learning these very, you know, unique cultural mores on both sides of the sort of proverbial bus stop. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to explore that because it's a very specific American phenomenon. And it specifically impacts marginalized communities, you know, people.
It was really interesting seeing that.
Because you were gifted too, right?
Yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah.
What have I done with that?
But so many people, especially, you know, who are successful, are tested and are deemed gifted or talented and go to gifted and talented schools. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that the folks who aren't gifted, but it's just that we are then acclimatized or acclimatized to the environment of quote unquote professional world. We're also taught anti-black and anti-community mm-hmm. Ideas.
It's so always interesting seeing, I guess, those kinds of schools, especially the depiction in David Makes Man, you know, mm-hmm. because like, I feel like the gifted schools I went to in Milwaukee at first, because Milwaukee is more diverse than most people know. Mm-hmm. All the white people just live in the suburbs. The schools like my elementary school, like my middle school, those were like gifted schools, but they had heavily like black and Latino populations. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until high school where mm-hmm. I went to like this rich all white boys school mm-hmm. where I really got that sort of like, oh, now I'm in like a culture shock.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see it in, you know, like the younger aspects, because I feel like maybe I was more ready for it in high school sure. than I would have been if I were a kid.
Well, I'm glad you were more ready for it in high school. I was not ready for, I mean, you know, when you go home, when you are literally trying to divert people's moms from dropping you off home, they're like, where do you live? And I'm like, Liberty City. And they're like, I could drop you off there. And I'm like, I know you don't even know where Liberty City is. even though the proximity to where we live is like a stone's throw, you don't know where this is. And then I have to like try to hide my embarrassment as you drive through and then wonder why the fuck I'm embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Like that was the other thing. I'd be like, well, why am I embarrassed? Mm-hmm. I mean, my family's doing what they can and what they have. But, you know, again, where you learn those cues, you learn like after you drive to so-and-so's, you know, out, you know, second house, You know, I had a friend who, I was like, you live in the same city, you have a second house. She had like a house on South Beach, and then they lived like out in the Redlands. And I was like, wait, what? That's not even that far to need a second house. Like, what are you saving time for? But they had one, and those things were really important to me and interesting to me because, again, all of the friends I had, including Andre, including my best friend, Glenn Davis, we were all sort of bused to these other schools and these other neighborhoods. And I just wanted to talk about what we learned and pick up there because one of the things that I still do to this day is code switch. But more than code switch, I like emotional switch. Mm-hmm. Like I turn off the sort of introverted, very shy self and like become this person who can speak eloquently mm-hmm. and elaborately and articulately about things that are, and I'm like, I don't really, half the time I don't care about the shit I'm talking about. half the time I'm just trying to make sure people are dazzled enough to leave me alone. Mm-hmm. I'm sweating. I'm anxious. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to make sure the performance of engagement is enough for people to like sort of back off and don't ask me what's really going on inside. Mm-hmm. And I know where I learned that. I learned that at a gifted school.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that I think is so strange about television, just historically going back to the beginning of TV, is how unrealistic classroom scenes seem. Mm. You know, just like the lesson being taught, for example, will be something that immediately parallels something happening in the protagonist's life.
Absolutely.
You know? And I was wondering, do you have specific moments just in the classroom that you then translated directly onto this show? Because I feel like this is one of the most authentic feeling classrooms I've seen on a TV show.
Oh, well, that's one of that lesson is grafted from my own life. I mean, I had dynamic. Again, you can't blame the program. The programs were great. I learned a lot. I had really great teachers, few of them were Black women, and they would just be like, you know, I know you're at this white school. Think you're going to date these little white girls and white boys, but you need to remember where you come from, right? And it would be so shocking to like for them to pull me aside and say that because I'd be like, hey, don't pull the veneer away. Like, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain. I'm working here. But you know, the lesson about who you are and where you come from was one that one of my teachers in elementary school was really adamant about. And I remember just being horrified about having to come in with something because I was, on the one hand, very proud of who we were and where we came from. At the same time, I had no idea how that would go over with the other folks in the classroom. I didn't know how if I explained the corner trade to them, you know, how would it go down? You know, if I explained to them that
the wire,
you know,
so
exactly.
They didn't know.
Exactly. If I explained to them like, you know, that a sex worker lived two doors down, how would that go over? What would it mean to them to explain what number running meant? You know, mm-hmm. And so I was like, so it was one of those moments where I sort of froze instead of acting. And now I feel like, well, maybe I should have, maybe I didn't. But I know the lesson in that moment was I was, again, hiding things that I was proud of and thought beautiful for the sake of performing normalcy.
Yeah. I mean, you think about that, like, what is even like this normalcy in like the American school system and like what we actually learn? I think there was like some viral tweet like the other day where someone was like, they actually taught us the names of Columbus's ships. Yeah. Like, who the fuck needs to know that?
They kind of rhyme is why
we know.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's things where it's just so interesting hearing that because, you know, I feel like the Black women I had as teachers were specifically like middle school. Like, mm-hmm. I remember my science teacher. I remember my English teacher mm-hmm. then. But once I got to Marquette, you mm-hmm. know, it was like, I cannot remember a Black female teacher that I had at that school. There were Black male teachers, but mm-hmm. one of them was the guidance counselor who wasn't mine, mm-hmm. and the other one taught basketball and was always asking me if I wanted to play basketball, and I was like, please stop talking to me about basketball. As a writer, I gravitated towards the people who were like the English teachers mm-hmm. or like ran the newspaper, and fortunately, those ended up being white men or the woman who ran the theater department. And so I felt like that helps us be successful, doesn't it? Right? Because the Black people, unfortunately, in many parts of the industry are the people who have the proximity to whiteness.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's, again, what the show is touching on, is that we learn those social cues early. You know, proximity to whiteness leads to a certain kind of success. To me, though, and I think this is really true of the show, and one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it to OWN is that it can cause alienation from your community. Mm-hmm. Is it worth it? Mm-hmm. You know, is it worth it to be more proximal to whiteness?
Yeah.
You know, as the great late Toni Morrison said, you know, white people got a problem and only they can fix it. And so your proximity to that problem only makes you implicit in some way. Mm-hmm. You always will look around and find yourself. I mean, every time that I've sort of been put in a position where I am, you know, given more responsibility or more access to the privileges of whiteness, I look around and I'm like, oh, and now I got to use this to like constrict another person of color, usually, or a woman, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I say this all the time to my students. I'm like, don't make me defend the system. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be up here defending this shit. I want to make it as free as possible and as easy as possible. And for you to be, and to grant you as much access as I can. Don't put me in a position where I got to like, look at these dumbass rules and then kind of relate them to you.
I feel like, when I think of the canon of like gay plays, it's usually plays by white men who've been able to give the audience that sort of thing. You know, mm-hmm. It's why I didn't respond that much to. I saw The Inheritance in London, both parts, all 24 hours, and it felt a little bit like a trying to do an Angels in America, trying to like here's a gay story, but we're making it palatable for straight people in the audience. Like, even some of the jokes are things, the way, you know, you write jokes, so, like, people can understand what slang you're using.
Sure, sure.
And then it's so different in contrast seeing, you know, like, A Strange Loop, you know, sure. which thankfully had an audience that seemed more game, you know. But I guess it is that hard thing of, like, we're still not even at the point where you can tell stories.
I mean, until you listen, you've got a list. I haven't seen either of those. I've only read great things about both. And I will tell you that until we, you know, theater is one of the few places that, because it's not as accessible, because it doesn't, you know, beam itself into your telephone while you're taking, you know, a shower or whatever, or, you know, cooking your latest vegan meal, the truth is there will be little to no change there until you get a younger audience who has very just few conscripts about what theater means to them. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're sitting there waiting for you to come out and do your soliloquy and then, you know, your fifth act denouement, then, you know, you're sunk. Mm-hmm. Especially if you want to try something new or something outside of the box. So, until we invest in that, until we really invest in bringing that audience in and sustaining them, right? Because they'll show up and let have a great time. There would be times during Ms. Black for President that we would be rocking. We would have folks in and you could tell they just came from the club or about to go to the club. And they would just be ready. They would be yesing. They would be hissing. They would be talking. They would be drinking. They would be toasting. They'd be standing up, screaming out, singing songs, all of the above. And you know, they would go, oh, that was a great night coming to this place. But then do they feel like they're welcome back the next time? Mm-hmm. Especially if we, you know, take down Ms. Black and put up something else. Mm-hmm. What do we put in its place?
Had a gobbler.
You know, the bow stratagem.
Yeah.
And be like, come on back to see the bow stratagem. It'll really wow you. It's like, what? You know? So we've got to be very conscious of that, I think.
I guess lastly, superficially questions. You were at the Oscars.
I was.
Was there anyone?
A long time ago, though.
So long ago. It was like yesterday, wasn't it?
No.
And now, you know, you've worked with Felicia Rashad so many times at this point, and now you're doing OWN with Oprah.
Yeah.
Has there been...
I saw her last night, though,
to be honest. Has there been anyone that you were, A, really excited to see at that ceremony, or B, anyone who's like since then been like, oh, I've met this person now, maybe I want to work with them?
Oh, well, there's tons of people I meet and I'm like, oh, I really want to work with them. I mean, Trace Lissette, I met at the Spirit Awards outside. I was flirting with Trace Lissette, and she,
I love her. Was so excited to see her in the show.
She was not featuring me. She was like, "You are friend zoned, sir." And I was like, "That's fine, but you're really beautiful and talented." So I was like, "I would really love to work with you." And we became, I think we've become good friends, and we sort of, you know, try to support each other as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her. I wanted, well, that the role was always going to be there, mm-hmm. but I specifically wanted Trace to do it because I know where she comes from, and I know she knows the world, and she would give an authenticity to it mm-hmm. that I knew few folks could. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, things like that have happened, and I really love finding artists who just, we become community. We want to work together. But you know, the big name folks I've met, and I like them a lot. It's great working with Oprah. It's great working with MBJ. It's a little like working for the Pep Squad. They are the most positive, happy, we can do this team that you ever want to be a part of. They're a dream team in that way. And, you know, my Slytherin self will be in the corner sort of going, guys, we don't have to be so brave, you know, like, can't we just.
Well, you know, that's my house too.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I'm Slytherin.
I actually
Slytherin.
Haven't read those books, so I'm going to pretend. Ravenclaw sounds.
No astrology.
Witty.
No Harry Potter.
Idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you like hyper-Christian? You just don't.
To be totally honest with you, not a strong reader. Never have been.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, they got the movies.
Yeah, right. Which I can kind of dig.
Audiobooks.
Right, sure. Right, right.
If you could get one narrated by Carly Simon.
I'm too busy listening to SiriusXM The Groove in the car. So.
Oh, that's dope.
Well, you know, Terrell, your show is amazing. It's lovely. You talking about before, like, Shepherd or anything, like blurring the lines between like fantasy and like reality. And I feel like your show does that so much. It was really just a fun experience.
Oh, thanks.
And people should watch it. It's already airing on OWN, so watch it. The Oprah Network, you know what it is.
Wednesdays at 10, I believe. 10 yeah. Eastern.
Good. Wednesdays at 10. All right.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
On Monday, climate activist Greta Thunberg, who is literally 16, addressed the UN's Climate Action Summit in New York City. Greta first rose to prominence as a climate activist last year in her home of Sweden, where she organized a series of very successful student-led climate strikes. Since then, she's continued to earn media attention, sailing across the Atlantic Ocean to attend the UN summit, where she had a lot to say. Yes, she sailed, because planes are killing the globe, I guess.
I saw her segment on Trevor Noah where he asked if she did that because of her Viking heritage.
Mm.
Solid mom joke. That joke is secret. That show is secretly for your mom.
But the best is she was like, no. I mean, like, you forget. Like, this is the thing about all the people in America who have been interviewing her. They forget. If anyone, like, when you listen to some of them, it's clear that they barely looked at her Wikipedia page. They're just like, here's this young Viking with braids, and we're going to embrace her because she's doing good things. Greta started, when she talks about how she got into this, she was totally introverted, had no friends, has Asperger's, and so she really, like, she didn't engage with people, and she had a really severe eating disorder, right? So all these things were happening, and she's like, think about how much courage it took for her to just go out there and, like, strike her first time. Mm-hmm. And she gets out there, and she does this courageous work. She's sailing across the country. She's meeting leaders. She's utterly fearless, and, like, Fox News can't handle a 16-year-old from Sweden. They can't. Donald Trump, none of them can handle.
So they are insane.
I mean,
it's, I mean, Fox News is generally insane, right? But the way that they have gone overboard attacking her is
she's the new AOC.
Right. Didn't that that Michael Knowles called her mentally ill? And I always think it whenever someone talks about that asshole, I think it's Michael Knowles from Ain't It Cool News. But it's not
the case.
She, well, first, so that happens, and it's so egregious and awful on the show that the host is like, whoa, 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 like, take that back. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't say that. And then Fox News does a written apology for mm-hmm. what happened. But there was this talk
they
show host.
They apologized for Ailes groping all those people?
No, they didn't go there. Not, come now. You know better than that. Hush money.
Bombshell, too.
Then this talk show host in the UK. She's a host at talk radio.
Graham Norton?
No. Julia, what's her name? Julia Hartley Brewer. She tweets at Greta. What kind of deranged ass adult tweets, "Dear Greta, just want you to know I bought several long haul plane tickets for my family to enjoy the beaches at Christmas. Level of guilt, zero." Sort of dumbass cunt.
Oh, seriously. I remember when that heifer did that.
And
I think she got thoroughly ratioed and dragged on Twitter.
What is wrong? Like, why is your heart so broken that you just attack a child who would never, who's trying to save the polar bears?
You're lording
That's
pollution
all she's
over
doing.
A child.
Right.
Just like Dr. Blight Laura Ingraham.
Yes.
When she was coming for her, too, calling her one of the children of the corn.
People make that reference all the time. Have you seen that movie? It
yes.
doesn't play in this context.
No, it
I'm
doesn't.
Sorry.
It doesn't, but it does with that commercial, the Progressive insurance commercial. Have you ever seen that one?
Wait, with the she shed on fire?
No, that one I like. I think that's funny. No, the one with the woman, you know, like the progressive lady.
Mm. Uh-huh.
Right. Wow. So they all come out of the corn, and my dad and I got into a big fight because I'm like, it's the children of the corn. And my dad's like, it's Field of Dreams. And then we Googled it, and it's both.
Mm. Really?
By the way, Flo, I feel like she should be equal to an Oscar at this point.
Oh, yeah.
She's put in her time.
She's an industry.
Right.
Yeah. Imagine if Wendy the Snapple Lady had it snatched all the time. Yeah. Had it on lock.
Or the Pine Sol Woman.
Right. Oh, God, miss her.
Yes. No one uses Pine Sol anymore.
That's the problem.
Dirty.
I do.
Do you really?
Yeah. It smells clean.
Yeah, yeah.
Use
no,
it
I like
for my floors. Weird.
Greta's speech, by the way, was fantastic.
I've watched it like 3 times.
Yeah, she opened it up with, "How dare you?
How dare you?" That was my best Greta.
It was very good. I would describe it as Sinead rage.
Yeah, it was the...
Which is advanced, because Sinead was in her 20s.
It was the second best "How dare you" I have ever heard after Eileen Davidson in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Not my brand, I can't comment.
Okay. That's how I like it. But, you know, she said, "You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing."
It's literally just facts.
Yes.
It's just, well, how about when she was in Washington earlier in the week, and here again, like, I'm just always blown away. Like, here is this girl who has all kinds of social anxieties and is so introverted, and she fucking testifies before Congress. And you know what her mic drop was? She didn't, you're supposed to, when you testify before Congress, you submit your written testimony for the record. She just submitted the IPAA, the climate report that talks about the 1.5 degrees of global warming. And she's like, "This is what I'm submitting because I don't want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to the facts."
Right. So that is the thing, too, about the woman who was lording her plane rides over her.
Right.
It's not like Greta is even saying, "Stop flying planes, everybody." She talked on Trevor Noah about, like, not everyone can do that like her, you know? Like, we have to get places, you know? It's not like
right.
we could take a vacation and then, like, take a boat there the entire time. It's if we did other things to save the globe, planes would be one of the least of our problems.
Right.
And no one seems to get this. I get that these Fox people, that conservatives are crazy and they hate
right,
liberals.
Right, their whole thing is based on denial, yeah.
Denial and hating everything. But it is just mind-boggling to see people constantly deny climate change.
To pretend it's a partisan issue or like, right. Not just that people are making it up, but that, imagine not listening to a scientist. It's just, obviously people are smarter than you. Listen to smart people. It's fun. It's beneficial.
Are these people in the hospital getting surgeries, just yelling at their doctor? No. I don't believe
that's
in science.
That's what I mean. By the way,
cancer isn't real.
You're right.
It's the same thing.
It's a partisan issue. The liberals created
the
cancer.
The socialists.
One minor thing Greta has done that I thought was interesting is that her mom used to be a singer.
Yeah, I saw that.
And she convinced her to stop based on how, the carbon footprint of traveling all the time, how dangerous that is, I guess. Do you know that her mom was the 2009 Eurovision contestant for Sweden?
I did.
How strange.
Yeah.
I've also brought up Eurovision twice this episode. Yeah. So congrats to me.
Right. And like how someone who does that then has a daughter who's so shy, so shy and introverted and, mm-hmm. But God bless Greta. I love Greta.
Well,
so
I mean,
much. My humble brag.
That makes sense.
She followed me back on Twitter.
Ooh. Oh, really?
I had a day. Like that was like, I was like, it was like 9 months ago. Cause I've been with Greta since day one.
Oh yeah.
And I got a notification and I was like, Oh my God, I told my husband, like, Greta followed me back. He's like, who is Greta? I was like, oh, are you a Republican? What do you mean, who's Greta?
I stan her, but I can't follow teens.
I understand that.
No.
Though there's nothing teen about her.
True. No, my natural mode is, of course, terror of teens. Yes.
Anyone under 18, I can't follow them on Twitter. It's just them knowing what I'm doing.
Fair enough.
It's creepy.
Fair enough.
It's creepy.
Teenagers are like, once upon a time, teenagers were, smoking, irresponsible people my generation. Now they're like little rats in little hoodies who whisper Billie Eilish at each other all the time. They have little secrets with each other.
Right. I just want them showing up in a leather jacket smoking at the carnival and
right.
saying, tell me about it, stud.
Teens should be 30 years old and Australian.
I will say that one thing that's very interesting about Greta is the reason she's so popular is not just because of the work that she's doing or her mom. It's also just because of this backlash to her, right?
Right.
And you think about the other people who deserve the same sort of energy. I constantly think about like Little Miss Flint.
Oh, sure.
And I wish that something could be done there, too. The same way mm-hmm. so many people are rallying behind Greta. I wish people could rally behind Little Miss Flint. I mean, if you took half of the money that was given to Notre Dame, Flint would have clean water. Not even half of it. Didn't they get like $1 billion fucking dollars for that damn cathedral?
They did, but then they also raised all the money for the churches down south.
Mm. Okay. The churches down south?
The ones that burned?
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Well, probably, the Catholic Church. A lot of those churches need to burn. I saw Spotlight.
Oh. I love that movie.
And also they plundered things from other countries too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's history.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Notre Dame.
Plundering, pillaging, yada, yada, yada.
Anyway, not that I'm advocating burning churches across Europe, but...
It was disproportionate response.
Right. It was disproportionate response. But it reminds me that the reason that that doesn't happen is Fox News isn't really scared of, Little Miss Flint,
No.
Because she's a black girl in Michigan. They don't care. Whereas Greta, something like that, people get upset, livid of it. The Parkland kids, for example,
right?
The white ones that really were prominent. Like you had people like Ben Shapiro and Laura Ingraham attacking them online.
Yeah, David Hogue, right? I mean, they couldn't get enough of him.
Yeah, but they're not attacking Little Miss Flint.
The best part about Greta is that she kind of falls squarely in the bucket of immigrants that Donald Trump would accept. So it's kind of funny because she's like, how do you like me now?
Right. And she's not quite old enough yet for Fox News people to call her desperate as a woman. So they have to sort of just deal with it at the time. Like maybe they can call her emotional.
They call her
mentally ill.
Yeah, right, yes.
Yeah.
Mentally ill Swedish girl.
Well, actually, maybe what Little Miss Flint should do is just call Laura Ingraham a bitch. Get her to angrily tweet at her. And then we can blow up this whole Flint thing.
I bet Greta would go visit Little Miss Flint and they could just pair up.
Yes, the color of friendship, too.
Right?
I feel like Ira's always on the verge of writing fanfic. We don't need to encourage this.
Me? Write fanfic? Never. Anyway, let them be friends.
Let them be friends. Elevate each other's causes.
Yeah. It's just nice seeing some global leaders be good instead of wearing blackface. I'm hoping that Greta does not have blackface in her past.
I'm guessing she doesn't.
How many times did it turn out he has done blackface? Was it something in 3 or 4 times?
Hashtag number unknown.
More times than La Bohème has been adapted.
Okay, yeah. We're talking about Justin Trudeau, of course.
He is so funny to me. That press conference that he did on a plane, by the way.
What was that?
Which is, first of all,
ill-advised.
Listen to Greta.
Right. Already not paying attention. Yeah.
Where he was like, you know, I don't want to say how many times I've done blackface because I can't remember.
Number unknown.
And it's like, listen, you maple leaf. Did you just wake up every morning and put on a black mask?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was
right.
Like really, it was really intense too.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't
he did
just
his
like
hands.
The whole thing. It was. I mean, I'm surprised he's not still a bit off color because it didn't all come off.
I just never get people who wear blackface to Halloween parties too, because it's like, who wants to make out with someone wearing blackface?
Do you want my foot
on you like you're a little match girl?
That's my problem with Halloween in general. I just find that kind of makeup like, ew. It's like spammy. It's like oozy. I can't stand it.
Anyway, we'll be back with Keep It. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. Alyssa, this is your very first Keep It.
It's my first Keep It. I hope I do you proud.
Of course you will.
I think you will.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Is Lewis your Keep It?
No.
Oh, well, then you've disappointed me.
You're shooting for a B+ at best now.
Okay, is it my turn?
Yes, it's your
turn.
Do
I go?
Yes,
okay,
go.
I'm kicking off my Keep It with a quote.
Oh.
Yeah, you guys, you know I'm prepared.
Are you graduating from high school?
No. Okay.
Is it
no.
When people show you who they are the first time, believe them?
So, Mr. Rogers, a quote from Mr. Rogers, "The world needs a sense of worth, and when it will achieve it, only by its people feeling that they are worthwhile." Right? How much wisdom did Mr. Rogers bring to us? So you know who can keep it? Retailer Yandy's, the sexy costume retailer that made the nicest neighbor costume, sexy Mr. Rogers, they have brought to the streets of America
that might
for
be
Halloween.
The rock bottom of sexy costumes.
Rock bottom.
Because, by the way, it's not a signature enough look that you would even recognize it as sexy Mr. Rogers initially.
Correct, because it has a tie, and it's like a midriff-bearing thing, and this is the same retailer known for making the sexy Handmaid's costume last year. Handmaid's
Already
tail,
sexy.
To be clear.
Don't put a hat on a hat.
But anyway, so that was my thing. Yandy says they try to one-up themselves every year, so
that sounds like the brainchild of a West Hollywood
Murdoch.
Instigay who puts on a sweater and a tie and just has underwear on with sneakers and goes around parties saying, "I'm Mr. Rogers."
Right, right, right.
And you're like, sure you are.
There are other things to be. Let him rest in peace.
I fucking loved Mr. Rogers.
Loved.
I can't wait to see that movie.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to emotionally handle the movie because I've cried every time the trailers come on.
Rogers makes me cry, and Tom Hanks is so
here's
Tom Hanks-y that I cry.
Tom Hanks officially has rounded out what he needs to do to be president of the United States.
Yeah, right.
He has been Jim Lovell. He brought the Apollo 13 back to Earth without anybody dying. He was Forrest Gump. He's been everybody.
Yep, Philadelphia has a little bit of some gay crap.
He has empathy for every population of this country.
Right. He has empathy for Americans who are stuck in airport terminals on the holidays.
Veterans, hello, Commander Dan, Lieutenant Dan, whatever his name was.
Stand-up comedians. Remember when Sally Field was going to be a stand-up in that movie? Yeah. Punchline.
Even the bros, bachelor party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everybody, you guys.
Every demographic.
Yeah.
Also, you know what I have to say about Mr. Rogers that I think is an underrated part of his legacy is him as an interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember specifically he had Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West, and she was talking about how she has to reintroduce herself to kids so that they're not afraid. It's such a memorable celebrity interaction. I feel like people should be minding that part of what he did way more, because the way
I'm
he
going
talked
to now
is so. He was just genuinely curious. I'm going to compare him to Jonathan Van Ness. His curiosity is somewhat electric in an interview format. You want to know what he wants to know about.
Getting curious with Mr. Rogers.
Yes, right. I wonder how that movie will be. Also, a guaranteed supporting nomination for Tom Hanks.
Is he supporting?
Isn't that wild? It's one of those movies where
how?
It's about... Like somebody is going in to interview Mr. Rogers, so he's technically the lead.
Oh.
It's Carrie Russell's husband. What's his real name?
Matthew Rhys.
Yeah. Oh, it's Matthew Rhys. Yes. Oh, speaking of Sally Field.
Right.
He was in Brothers and Sisters.
Oh, yes, yes.
Fine.
I had to break up with that.
Wait, with Brothers and Sisters?
Yeah. Remember that epic finale, that one season finale they had? It's like... Calista Flockhart had just overcome cancer. They were adopting a baby. They kill Rob Lowe in a car accident. There's a pileup.
Well,
Uncle Saul has
kill Rob Lowe,
right?
In a car accident.
I mean, the
on
whole
any
thing.
Show he's been on.
And it's like, was it Saul, her uncle? He came out as gay, and then they gave him AIDS in the same episode. Like, what the fuck was that? I never watched it after that. That was it. They broke me.
Well, yeah, it really did. The soap jumped out.
Well,
I think it worked when it was still Emily Van Camp was the, you know, the illegitimate daughter.
Yeah. Right?
But then they introduced that illegitimate son who maybe was faking it and scamming them.
I stopped before that.
It turned into like 2000s General Hospital.
What did we do with Rachel Griffiths? I love her. You ever seen Hillary and Jackie?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great
awesome
movie.
Awesome movie. Yeah. Nominated for that.
Come back, Rachel.
I know. Love her. Yeah. She looks a little like, I guess, Betty Gilpin. She's a face I want to just, moving on, sorry.
She looks like the actress from Transparent if she shaved her eyebrows.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, Lewis, what's your keep it?
This is a salty keep it. A keep it to this season of Big Brother, which is the reality show I still insist on watching for reasons I can't entirely comprehend. It's like if people were living in The Sims and you couldn't just, you know, murder them in a swimming pool accident. They had to keep surviving.
I started watching this season again, too. I bailed. We talked about it when it was full of racists in the beginning of this season. But then they started turning on each other and voting each other out.
Right.
And I feel like the second act of this season was riveting.
Yeah.
And then the third act, it's gone back off the rails.
Well, the thing about Big Brother is it always is very compelling at one point because the two loudest, most problematic or strategic Machiavellian players eventually have a tête-à-tête. The problem is one of them gets eliminated and then one lives on, and then that person either wins the show or is the only interesting part of the show or whatever. In this case, this one guy, Jackson, who started dating this other contestant named Holly, they ended up like being the king and queen of the house, and nobody has challenged them. And what's weird about Big Brother is usually you have enough strategic players that showmances, as they're called, are one, broken up, or two, people like this Jackson guy who's just has the energy of somebody who won't let go of the pool table at like a frat bar, just that kind of energy. Is still in power, and the only person against him is this girl, Nicole, who's like this bookish kind of self-effacing person, and she seems like the person who is smart enough to know what to do, but she instead just led him and this woman into the final three, and now I'm like, I can't even root for you because you have enabled the worst person on the show.
When she got rid of Tommy...
Who was this gay guy who was full of life and would have been a much better ally for her and somebody she could have beaten in the final three. I'm sorry, this is all very elementary today.
No, it's, it reminds me that The Better Show, I don't know if you watch it. I don't know if we talked about it. Big Brother Canada.
I've seen a little bit of it. I don't stand it.
Big Brother Canada, you should watch the whole season.
Okay.
Big Brother Canada has better gameplay. It's more diverse. And they put in people who, someone like Jackson, would not have survived as long as he would have in Big Brother Canada because people would be like, fuck you. We're not letting you steamroll us all season.
Yeah.
Like, people are willing to challenge the person who's like the king of the house in Big Brother Canada.
Yeah.
But every time there's always just a bunch of white people on Big Brother and then like four people of color, and they get picked off. And then the other white people are still living in high school and want to defer to the man who's going to save them.
And I want to say that that's the main problem with this season of Big Brother, too, is that every person of color was picked off one by one from episode one to two to three to four. And then we were left with these people. And now we have, you know, and Abercrombie's
on. It's like The Bachelor.
Yeah.
In Paradise and all franchises, actually.
Yeah. That's true.
And they were made to stay in a camp.
Right. It was summer camp themed, but I mean, and then it the was overtones were the overtones.
It's like, was that Les Moonves' parting shot? My keep it this week is less of a keep it and more of a plea for humanity to do the right thing.
Oh, here we go. Is this about
Rosie
Perez? Oh.
Has stolen Lenny Kravitz's sunglasses.
I saw that.
There's a special Gmail address to find the sunglasses.
He put on Twitter, "I'm missing this pair of sunglasses after my show in LA at the Shrine this weekend. They are incredibly sentimental to me. They are vintage and they belonged to a family member. Hoping to get them back. No questions asked. Any information, please email kravitzglasses@gmail.com.
I have to say, I saw that on Twitter and I like paused for a minute. I was like, poor Lenny, as if he lost his dog. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but they do look historical. I mean, they've been all over.
Dumb question. They're men's glasses?
Don't know. Not entirely clear.
He's related to so many wonderful women. First of all, Zoe Kravitz. If they're hers, I'm already concerned. Is it Lisa Bonet? Because, I mean, that would be fabulous. And his mom is the legendary Roxy Roker from the Jeffersons.
I feel like they're Roxy's glasses.
Yeah.
If they're Roxy Roker's glasses, I will cry on air.
They look like Roxy's glasses. Have you seen them?
Yeah. I think that they actually look like women's glasses.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. I'm sad for him, but I'm excited.
You know what gives it away? The arms of the glasses. You know, they're like very, I think they're like retro 70 lady glasses.
Yes. Back when we still define sunglasses by gender.
Right. Yes. Correct.
The dark ages.
My sunglasses go by they.
Oh, I bet they do. You know what's interesting about Lenny Kravitz? He, to me now, and I feel like he looks so the standard of what a rocker looks like. Like if you were to pick a rocker on The Sims, it would look like Lenny Kravitz.
Right.
He almost doesn't have an identity to me because the idea of what a rock performer looks like is so now seemingly based on him.
I love Lenny so much. I feel like one of the things that got me into my Sex and the City fandom is him.
How?
This is going to sound crazy. I didn't really watch Sex and the City that much, but I was obsessed before I got into it, Sex and the City, with the Gap commercial that Sarah Jessica Parker danced to Lady in.
Oh, right.
And it was all pink.
I remember that.
Obsessed with that song, and I became obsessed with him, and I became obsessed with her, and then I had to start watching Sex and the City.
I wonder what my
Reruns or original?
I think it was still on at that point
that's
for me.
Good. That's nice.
I went to college at the exact time when everybody had the pink book, so I watched it all in retrospect.
I think that I started Sex and the City probably a year before Paris.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Alexander Petrovsky.
Yes. A year or so before it. I was able to watch it all, like, in reruns.
And, right.
Like, watch some of it on HBO, too. But I feel like I didn't dive in until the end of the show. Because it just seemed like I watched The Sopranos with my mom. But watching The Sex and the City with my mom when we had HBO as a kid just seemed I wasn't going to be watching that with her.
My TV chronology is that Friends, ER, and My So-Called Life were all my freshman year of college. It's when they debuted.
Good time
be
there.
It's why I am who I am.
We had no interesting television from 2004 to 2008. Everybody on my floor watched Family Guy, and I was, watching.
In college?
Yeah.
Wait, no. 2004 was the launch of Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, Lost, and Ugly Betty.
I did watch Grey's Anatomy, and I caught up on Veronica Mars. That's all that happened for
Veronica
me in college.
Too. Yeah. Never watched Lost?
No, not my brand.
Me neither.
Not into being spooked. Also, Lenny Kravitz makes me want to pose this question to you. What is your least favorite song by your favorite artist?
Least favorite song?
I know my least favorite Lenny Kravitz song is Guns N' Roses off of the Blueprint Volume 2 by Jay-Z. Because he rhymes Guns N' Roses with friends and foeses.
That's too bad.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable. I don't love Justify My Love, Madonna's song.
I don't love that song.
I'm sorry, what?
I love the William Orbit remix. I don't love the version with Lenny Kravitz on it.
I don't love Dark Sky, Dark Star by the Grateful Dead.
Oh, you're a Grateful Dead person.
Oh.
Were you at the Bowl recently?
I missed it by a day, but I go everywhere else, and I love it. But Dark Star, it doesn't make me feel good.
Well, Hall & Oates, you know, that's my favorite band. Yes. My tattoo and all. I loathe Method of Modern Love.
Wow. Wouldn't it
really?
Best?
Yeah. It just opens up with them doing the, like, spelling method, like, M-E-T-H-O. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I get that.
I want you crooning. I don't want you.
It's tedious.
Spelling like you're on Schoolhouse Rock.
I think if I had to pick the worst Madonna single, though, I would go any single 2012 onward. Like, Gimme All Your Lovin' might be my least favorite, which had Nicki Minaj and MIA on it.
Why?
I just don't like that song.
You. You wanna?
Fell right into it.
Thanks again to Terrell Alvin McCraney for sitting down with me and Lewis. And Alyssa, thank you for being a co-host this week.
Oh, I'm just not going to leave the chair. Just going to stay here.
An Airbnb squatter just
exactly
on the show.
Right.
Just like Anna Navarro. She'll never leave The View.
Every other Friday.
We'll see you next week. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.
With chocolate treats mixed into dark chocolate ice cream, the Tillamook Chocolate Collection is a chocolate game changer. Because the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection Ice Cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.